show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We weren't able to record a show last week, and that is all on me this time. My computer hard drive crashed, and we just couldn't work out a way. We tried and tried. We tried a little phone thing.
Didn't work.
It didn't work. So you got to have the Skype. But I'm back. I'm ready to go. And so is the chivalrous Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this? Again, I don't know what it's like in Lawrence, but it's awfully gross here in Kansas City. A little bit of a light kind of stinging cold semi-sleet rain going on. That's just, it's not fun.
No, it wasn't doing anything when I got home from work, so I don't know what it's doing out there. It's supposed to be in the 60s this weekend. Like,
yeah,
what
yeah,
is that about?
I know, that'll be awesome if that's the
crazy.
Way it is. I hope now would be the good time to start warming up, you know, before I have my child. Because
right.
the last thing you want to do is try and tote a newborn baby through really cold and snow. Hopefully that'll be the case.
Yep, and that's the countdown, everyone. Jeff has what's the due date?
February 11th.
All right.
February 9th. So. Well, they gave us two. So, like, we calculated on our own. We calculated the date, and then we went in and we're like, this is the date we're calculating. And then it was February 9th, and then the lady was like, oh, yeah, February 11th is what I'm getting. So we'll just keep it February 9th. And we were like, okay. And the next time we went to the doctor, they were like, oh, so it's February 11th? We're like, oh, geez. It's somewhere in there. They kind of, babies go on their own schedule, apparently. So
right. So in other words, for listeners, there's probably going to be a few weeks where we don't have Jeff. And I'm going to see who we'll bring in to help cover the slack. So don't be alarmed if you don't hear Jeff. He'll be back.
Yes, I will be back. It will be just for that first month or so. Probably by the time the season starts, I'll be definitely back to...
You'll be an old pro. You'll be like, kids are nothing. This is easy.
Yeah. I'll hopefully be able to be to the point where I can at least squirrel away an hour or an hour and a half once a week and make it happen. So that's kind of the goal. But
yep. We'll tackle that when we get there.
Yes, indeed we will. Now we have some other topics to tackle, mainly... The Royals went out and signed, and our last show, like I said, we weren't able to record one last week, but the one before that, we talked about all the possible pitchers out there that were still left. This is kind of right after Wei-Yin Chen had signed, and
that was the day after, I think.
Yeah, so, and he was the one that both Mike and I wanted, along with, I think most Royals fans kind of thought he would be the best fit, but once he got signed, then it was, you know, who's left. And we both kind of, I think, came to the same place that even if he's definitely a top two or three of all the pitchers that were out there. And he was the guy that we thought seemed like there was the most smoke, the most noise about with the Royals and seemed like the best fit for the Royals. And it was Ian Kennedy. And boom, that's what they went out and did. Right now. As of what we know, it's a 5-year, $70 million deal. That's the rumored figures. There has been nothing official from the Royals. It's been a week and a half now.
It was that Saturday morning of the 16th. So nine days ago.
It's strange,
but what I saw from Sam Mellinger is that he was on a pre-planned family vacation, and so he hasn't been able to get to Kansas City to do the physical.
Gotcha.
So if that's correct, if that's true, then it's nothing to worry about. Now, if there's something else, then I don't know. But it's nobody seems to be worried at all. So we'll see. But it is kind of strange to go through and have this agreed upon deal, you know, and then a week and a half later, still nothing. And it's possible that the Royals might be, you know, trying to find who they're going to clear off the roster to make room, or if they might be doing a trade. So, I mean, maybe that's why they're okay with letting things go and not getting the physical out of the way now. So
that's yeah, I mean, there's a million possible things that could be happening.
Yeah.
That are preventing it from getting out. But yeah, that does kind of throw a little wrinkle with the idea of the family vacation. You know, what are you going to do?
Right.
It's the off season for the players too, I guess, right?
They only really get a couple months, so it's...
That's true. You got to make it worth it, you know?
Yep. So I can't blame them. And it is kind of surprising that they haven't gotten the yearly breakdown at least, because sometimes that stuff comes out sooner than the actual signing. I mean, it just hasn't come out. And the main detail that anybody really knows, other than the 5 years, $70 million, is that there's an opt-out after 2 years. And so... The yes. breakdown of that contract is kind of important to tell you what both sides are assuming. If it's $12 million a year this year and next, well, he's probably going to take that opt-out. If it's $16 million this year and next, he's probably not going to take that opt-out in that case, because he'll still have most of the value of the contract left. But if it's like $16 million for next season and the year after that, you know, then he might go opt out after those 2 years and try to cash in again. So that's kind of the clue that people are trying to look at, because initially 5 years seemed like a lot for what the Royals, one, have seemed to be leaning towards all offseason for any free agent, and two, for a guy like Kennedy. It seemed like 2, maybe 3 years was going to be what they'd be looking for, and then here it comes, it's 5. So... my hunch is that they're thinking that they might load it up front, let him get better, and after 2017, when everybody else leaves, then he takes off. And then they're not on the hook for the last 3 years. That's my hunch of how it's going to work out, but who knows? I mean, you know, a pitcher into his 30s like Kennedy might be looking at, you know, hey, that's a $70 million guaranteed contract. No matter how it's broken down, he might not want to opt out just because it's guaranteed now. You know, he can get those 2 years and know that he's still going to get the full 5 and 70 if he doesn't opt out. And then, you know, whereas if he has just iffy years, then maybe he goes out, tries to be on the market, and doesn't get the same payoff that he had turned away from the Royals. So it's a really interesting contract from that regard, just because who knows what's going to happen in 2 years. Maybe he's lights out and goes and cashes in and makes $18 million a year for 3 or 4 years. Or maybe he gets shelled and the Royals are stuck with a guy that isn't any good for 2 or 3 years more than they otherwise would have wanted him.
Yeah, you know, it's for me, one of the things, the 2 year opt out is really interesting. So the Royals, I mean, they've done everything but literally say we're really shooting for this 2 year window, because every decision they've made is just absolutely, they know they are as all in as a team like the Royals can be for the next 2 years on this thing, you know, as they should be, you know. Totally. I completely agree with all the decisions they've made, which surprisingly enough, you know,
right.
And especially after, you know, I wish they would have gotten Chen like we kind of talked about, but yeah, as I said on this previous show, Kennedy was probably my kind of number one guy, I thought. And we can talk a little bit of kind of rehash some of those points maybe a little bit in a minute. But from a contract standpoint, the 2 year opt out is so interesting because, you know, not only are they kind of drawing that line there, but when you look at that situation of all those players leaving after 2017, so let's just take if the 5 years for $70 million number is true, then or I should say accurate, then, you know, let's just assume the $14 million average annual value in this scenario. So that means that, you know, as of 2018, he's still making $14 million. And if he, you know, chooses, you know, because you, worst case scenario, you know, supposedly, is that you have Ian Kennedy, who performs kind of like he did last year, which is to say he maybe underperforms a bit, and then that's kind of what he is. And then 5 years from now, you have, how old is he, 30 years old?
He is 31 years, 1 month, 6 days old.
Okay, 31 years old. So, you know, your worst case scenario is he underperforms, and then you've got a 36-year-old pitcher who is making $14 million a year. And that can be a concern, and, you know, it's, that's legitimate. But if you think about a couple things, 2 years from now, we've talked about the mass exodus, Kane, Hosmer, Moose, all those guys, you know. So assuming all those come off the books, I mean, you're looking at $60, $70 million at that point. That's just gone in an instant, you know. As soon as free agency hits, that's all gone, assuming they don't, you know, sign them to contracts or extensions or whatever. But so you've got all that, and then you've also got the scenario of, okay, you know, baseball is in such a weird position that the skill sets now are so defined and everything is so precise that the, and we've talked about it before, just the skyrocketing salaries, and that's part of the reason there. So just being mediocre it's still performing at such a high level from, you know, in the global sense of the phrase, and it's so specialized still that it's worth a lot of money. So even mediocre pitchers still make good money. So when you think about the rising cost of pitching, and 2 years from now, I mean, we've seen, you know, multiple players now have signed $30 million a year contracts. So obviously that's the absolute elite, best of the best, but that still drives the entire market up. So, mm-hmm. you know, if the best in the game is making $30 million, then someone who's mediocre making $14 million 2 years from now, when there's additional inflation going on, I mean, it's not outlandish to say, you know, some pitchers might be making $35 million. You know, when Zach Greinke opts out of his contract again, and he could be making $35 million. Mike Trout,
David Price has an opt out too.
You know,
I think.
Yep. I mean, Jason Hayward. I mean, there's nothing that says, you know, in 2018 people might not be signing $40 million contracts.
Right.
You know,
and
someone like Mike Trout.
That's why they do that stuff.
Yep. So even if he were to not opt out and he were to just, you know, be mediocre, even to slightly below average, like, it's still going to be the Royals are still going to be in a position where, yeah, you don't like to be paying $14 million to someone who's not performing at the level you want him to perform. But at the same time, assuming he's healthy and they're getting the innings out of him, I mean, yeah, that $14 million is going to seem a lot better in 2018 than it does now. And that's what both the Royals and Ian Kennedy are banking on, because they know worst case scenario what you're getting from Ian Kennedy. And that's what he gave last year, which is actually still, you know, a decent amount of value for someone who can eat some innings, and, you know, as long as he doesn't have to be the centerpiece of your rotation. And when you mix in, you know, still having your Donovan Tura, possibly Kyle Zimmer, possibly even Miguel Almonte, still having Sal Perez, still having Alex Gordon, and then new guys like Raul Mondesi and Bubba Starling are hopefully up. You know, you can kind of fill in these gaps. So, I mean, it gives them a lot of things to work with, and it definitely can present a couple of interesting scenarios that play out, but. You know, overall, it seems I'm pretty happy, because even knowing what we can get from Kennedy now, the $14 million is still good in today's baseball for a pitcher of his caliber, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked in the past about, like, wins or the value of a win, like talking about wins above replacement and things like that. And, you know, it used to be considered, I think, even like 3 years ago, that it was five, maybe up to $6 million per win above replacement, and now it's getting into the point where it's like 7, 7.5, and that ratio is always going to go up, because, I mean, you still, even with with guys like Trout, you know, the 10 win above replacement season, you know, it's still, that's the high watermark pretty much. 10 is a pretty special year for anybody, you know, because it's all scaled basically from
right
what's a replacement player. So as the money goes up, the value for each win above replacement is going to rise as well. So if you're a guy like Ian Kennedy, who, you know, last 6 years he's made 30 starts or more, you know, that's got some value. That if he's a two-win pitcher and value of a win is, you know, $7-8 million, well, that's right in market value if he's average. And that's, you know, not assuming that maybe he improves as a Royal in Kauffman Stadium with that defense behind him. That's also assuming, you know, that salaries continue to rise, that, you know, I think it's a safe assumption to make. You know, the business side of baseball is extremely healthy, so I don't see any reason for a guy like Kennedy to not, you know, end up being at least league average and being a 190, 200 inning kind of guy. And those guys are, you don't find them in, you know, your minor leagues all the time, because one, you either don't call those guys up right away, or two, you don't want to push them right away, or they just can't cover 200 innings. You know, a lot of times that falls to those veteran types. And so if he can come in and be a 200 inning guy, even league average, that's fine. I mean, if he does 33 starts and 6 innings a start, you're looking at 198 innings, you know, and that's all you really need to do. And I think that's perfectly fine for a guy like Ian Kennedy. And you might even have some upside. You know, there might even be upside for him to be better because he's coming into a better spot with a better defense behind him. And most everything is either as good as he's been or even in some cases improving. Like his strikeout rate has gone up. Each of the last, well, basically every season since he's been a full-time guy. His walk rate has gone down a bit from the last 2 years. So it's you're taking a guy who seems to be striking out more guys, walking fewer guys, putting him in one of the better stadiums to prevent home runs, and you have a defense behind him that was one of the best in the league the last few years. Pretty good recipe. I mean, it's a pretty good recipe for someone to be better than what their numbers have been.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a guy who – as of to your point, as of 2013, was walking 3.6 batters per 9 innings, striking out 8.1, and now as of 2015, he only walked 2.8 batters per 9 innings, almost an entire batter less, and 9.3 strikeouts per 9, more than an entire strikeout, more than an additional strikeout over those 2013 numbers per 9 innings. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive. Normally, that's not – the 28 to 30 curve doesn't quite work like that for pitchers all the time. So to see that is pretty encouraging. And this kind of brings us to something that we had talked about previously, where the Royals really come at this thing, you know, baseball, as an organization, meaning, you know, it's not – you know, for all the good that – Billy Beane has done in his career, sometimes you get the feeling that he does make some kind of unilateral type decisions, and not only in just, you know, stuff that we know from stuff that we read, but you can just kind of see the decisions that don't necessarily make sense, but he thinks he's got something, and, you know, whatever. That's just supposition on my
part. Like trading Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, and like, you know, maybe signing Billy Butler, maybe that's something that if you ask more people in the organization, maybe they wouldn't have done it, but who knows? Anyway, you know, I really think the Royals hardly ever do anything like that. And for whatever you can say about Dayton Moore, you've really, you know, there was a little bit maybe early on that was kind of off-putting. He almost seemed arrogant early on, has all the trust the process stuff and everything. But you can see now that everything swung the other way and the Royals are a successful franchise and they've won a World Series and he's exactly the same guy that he was, you know, and he's not like, oh, I told you guys, I told you to trust the process. Like, you know, to his credit, he hasn't really said that phrase all that often and hasn't really pulled out the, I told you so, you know, it was just, he has reiterated how much they had faith in their players and their system and it eventually worked. So you can kind of see that he is, you know, a little bit more humble than maybe he was given credit for at the beginning of his tenure. But all of that is to say that there is definitely a lot of collaboration, I think, in a lot of these decisions. So, you know, we obviously don't know what went into signing Ian Kennedy, but I think it's not unreasonable to say Dave Island was consulted, most likely, and there was probably some way that Dave Island said, hey, you know, I think Ian Kennedy is a guy that we can work with here. I see something that I can help, you know, and while they've never, I don't think they've ever explicitly said like, oh, Dave Island said we need to go out and get this guy. You get the feeling that that's kind of who they target, and they kind of rely on him a lot for those types of things because it's been working. I mean, you know, everyone that's come here has had a bump, a successful initial run, if not, you know, sustained. I mean, we'll see how long Ensign Volquez can keep it up, if he can repeat what he did last season. But, you know, he had a really good year, and you know, pretty much every pitcher that's come here.
Pretty much, yeah, like Vargas, you know, that was an underwhelming signing, and he pitched fine in his first season, and Volquez was good. He built off a lot that he did in Pittsburgh.
Got three for his first season and a half.
Got three right after they got him. I mean, that looked like a total dump on both sides, and the Royals got something after Guthrie, so, I mean, that's something.
Jonathan Sanchez is not even in baseball.
No, he's not. I think he's in, like, some comeback league, but he's...
Yeah,
he's
and Guthrie started Game 7, the World Series last year. So, you know, there's... I mean...
But Shields had, you know, James Shields had two of his best seasons in his career, and that's a top-of-the-line kind of guy. You know, it's a top 20, you know, easy frontline guy, and two of his best years came with Dave Island around. Irvin Santana, not a lot of people liked that deal when they got him, and Irvin Santana was really good. And so I kind of remember something when they got Guthrie that there is some indication that they had talked to Island to figure out, hey, do you see something here? They made the adjustment, and Guthrie was useful the rest of the year. And Island already, I mean, he knows Ian Kennedy from their time with the Yankees.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm sure Island had a lot to do with it. And I know that I think Leske at one point said, yeah, we probably it was probably his idea. Like, that might have made him the top guy on their list instead of Wei-Yin Chen. That Island and Kennedy connection was something that made it even more appealing to the Royals to go get Ian Kennedy over any other option, which if that's the case, I mean, it's hard to not trust Dave Island at this point. So he really has. And, you know, some of that is, you know, sure, because the Royals have a great defense and a really friendly ballpark to keep the ball in, you know, prevent home runs and everything. But it's still, you can also see it. You can see that these guys are pitching pretty well, pretty much all over the place. So, you know, it seems like Island's got it figured out. And if that translates to working for Ian Kennedy, then that's awesome. I mean, the Royals are investing a lot, or at least they're guaranteeing a lot. We'll see again about that opt-out to see if it works out that way. But, you know, $70 million, that's their second biggest contract they've ever given out. And it's only because the biggest one was Alex Gordon, you know,
a week before.
just before it. So it's... You know, I mean, they're definitely confident to some extent if they're going to be, you know, making that kind of a deal. You know, and it's interesting to see that 5 years and $70 million is what gets it for him. And Wei-Yin Chen went for 5 years and $80 million. You know, so, I mean, that's maybe even more, you know, credence to Kennedy being their top guy over Chen, possibly. You know, in both cases, they give up a draft pick. So... You know, it was pretty much the same situation, same kind of contract. I can't imagine that if they, you know, offered 5 and 70 to Chen, they'd have been completely shut down. They probably could have stretched it to 5 and 80 if they needed to, but they didn't.
I mean, over 5 years, you're looking at, you know, extra 2 years, or I'm sorry, extra $2 million per year.
Yeah, and it's like, that's not that big deal. And you can find ways to adjust that. You know, you can add an option that you know nobody's going to take and just defer $5 million of that so that it's
Yeah.
1 million. You know, you can do stuff like that to make it fit. And
did the Orioles, did they give, or I'm not sorry, the Orioles, crap, who did Chen sign with?
The Marlins.
Marlins, thank you. Did they give him an opt-out?
No.
So, and similar to Jason Hayward, because I think his contract, people were thinking it was going to be in the 200 million range, and it was more, and it was 183 or whatever it was. So part of that was because he had the opt-outs. So you don't wonder if maybe that's what the Royals came with, and they said, hey, you know, to Chin's agent, we might not give you as much as everybody else. We'll give you this 2-year opt-out. So if he blows up for the next 2 years and his numbers will be better behind our defense in park, then, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter now because they didn't, you know, that's not who they signed, but that could have feasibly been one of their sales pitches.
Yeah. And I think both of those guys are represented by Scott Boras. So, I mean, it's not like they didn't have opportunity. They could have easily been talking about both of them. And
I do wonder how often that happens with an agent who has multiple pitchers that you would go after, how much they're just like, hey, here's a deal. Which one of your two guys wants it? You know?
Yeah, it might be. And, you know, that could very well have been what they did. And Chen maybe didn't want to go to the Midwest. And maybe it was that extra $10 million was a big enough deal. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, the Royals always have opportunity to go trade for Chen in a year and a half anyway, because it's the Marlins, and that's just what they do.
That's how it happens.
So we'll see.
So right now, though, I mean, we talked about this, what it would be last show before they actually signed it, but now that it's done, I mean, I think your opening day starter next year is Volquez, just because even though Ventura has the more talent, you know, the perception is that last year Ventura didn't quite handle it well being the number one guy. So I think they're going to try and relieve some of that pressure. But I think you go, you know, Volquez as your number one, and then you're going to have Ventura as your number two. You're going to have Kennedy as your number three. And then you probably slot in Medlin as your number four. And then you have, you know, either Danny Duffy or Chris Young as your fifth starter. And one of, you know, that fifth starter spot going to probably be maybe a revolving type door through the season, you know, maybe as they try and maybe they start Danny Duffy out and he doesn't work. So they put Chris Young in until he can fill in the time, until hopefully someone like a Kyle Zimmer is ready to come up and fill the role or something, you know. So who knows there. But, you know, between Young and Duffy and Zimmer and Almonte, I'm confident that one of those four, if not all of them at some point, are going to be able to give you value in that five spot. And then I'm pretty confident about, you know, that they're going to get pretty good value from those first four pitchers. You know, I think Volquez is going to be similar to what he was last year, because that's now two consecutive years that he's had pretty similar seasons. And then I think Ventura is going to hopefully find a way to kind of mature his game a little bit, to the point where those games where he's just cruising and then it just kind of barely slips away from him a little bit. You know, I think hopefully he can get to the point where he can shut those down. Cause if he can, I mean, was it game two against the Blue Jays where, he pitched what was like five scoreless innings, and then it was the sixth inning and they scored three runs on him or whatever. And he hadn't it was only like 5.1 innings. He didn't even make it.
He pitched well. And then there were some of the shadows and those went away and he didn't really adjust to it. Yeah. It was something like that.
But, you know, so
he had a lot of games like that too, but
yeah,
you know, a few games where he fought through it, like in game six, he kind of got through it. So, I mean, Ventura's definitely got a shot to improve. And his second half was good. His first half was so just inconsistent and weird. It just, nothing really seemed to work. And then the second half, he was a lot better. And hopefully that's something he'll build on. He's getting a lot of buzz from ESPN and other places as like a breakout type of guy. And yeah, you see the stuff, and obviously that's there. If he can harness it, then Yeah, you can definitely see it. But, you know, we thought he was going to harness it last year, and he really didn't, you know, for the full season. So he's still got some stuff to do. He's, you know, he's still young, too. So,
yeah. And we've talked, we kind of hashed it out again before, so we don't really need to go to it too much. But, I mean, his stats were almost identical from a peripheral standpoint from 2014 to 2015. But just the ERA number jumps out at you because it was so much. You know, 4.08 in 2015 versus 3.2 in 2014. So it kind of just goes to what you were just saying, you know, some of those little kind of weird things. And if he can get worked out, you know, his numbers are going to look a lot better. And we got to remember, he's the dude's only 24. I mean, he hasn't been around. He doesn't feel like he's been around for that long, but then you still like, you know, normally you think, you know, a lot of pitchers when they come up, are 20, 23, 24. So him coming up at, you know, just barely 22, and that was, you know, just kind of a cup of coffee at that point. But,
yeah.
You know, his true rookie season being when he's 23, I mean, he's, you know, he's really kind of just now entering what would normally be a prime for a pitcher. So, you know, if he's definitely a good breakout candidate. And, I mean, if he takes that next step and then you get what we think we can get, you know, you get 2014 Ian Kennedy and you get the Volquez we've had the last couple of years. And, if Medlin can be the good Medlin from last year that we saw, where I think some of the times when he was having his issues, I think it was just kind of fatigue and getting back into the swing of things and kind of, you know, he'd been, what is it, two full years he'd been gone almost? Two full seasons?
Just about, yeah.
So, I mean, just kind of getting back into getting the feel for pitching again, you know, I think was tough for him. So sometimes you'd see him and he'd be cruising and then kind of would just slip away. And I think part of that is just kind of relearning how to do all that. And, you know, some of those seem like it feels almost like we're back in the 2011 days. Like, oh, if Moustakas comes up and if Hosmer, you know, but these are a little bit more reasonable. The Royals are at that point now where the ifs are much more reasonable. You know, it's reasonable to think Volquez can give you what he gave you the last couple or what he's given the last couple of years. And excuse me, in these type of things. So, but I mean, if those things kind of fall the Royals way, then I mean, I'll take that rotation any day of the week behind this defense and the offense that they put up last year. I mean, with hopefully, you know, Moose and Haas can even take things a notch further than they did, and everybody else kind of keeps cruising. And I mean, things are shaping up pretty nice.
Yeah, it's going to get them. You know, they should be favored by most to win the division again, which is.
I don't know how you could possibly not pick them.
Still so bizarre. Yeah, someone will find a way.
Oh yeah, someone
they will, and people will go
White
crazy.
Sox signed Brett Lowry, and they still got Chris Sale, and everything's gonna, you know, it's like, well,
yeah,
nope.
But
yeah,
there's,
I mean,
still,
like,
you know, it's still the team to beat. So,
I mean, the Tigers. Did they sign?
Zimmerman,
right?
Later,
yeah,
and then they just got Upton.
Oh, that's right. Just
I mean, and that's good, but they're right. Also old. Now, if they play to their potential, if they're healthy and they, you know, they do it, yeah, it's going to be – they're going to be a handful. But if they're battling injuries and weird stretches of ineffectiveness like last year, then they're extremely beatable just like they were last year. So
their bullpen is still a flaming wet turd. So
right, basically. I mean, they still haven't done anything to that. They've got – like just almost $200 million and it does, none of it goes to their bullpen. So it's just like,
well, they, I mean,
what are you doing?
They go to the World Series in 2012, they get swept by the Giants, and you know, in large part because their bullpen is just not good. They've known for years it's the bullpen. And they haven't done a single thing. They signed Joaquin Soria at one point, and that's about all that they did. I mean, yeah. What else have they done to try and shore up their bullpen? Nothing. And I don't know how you can let that go. You know, you can ignore that any further. I mean,
Yeah, unless they
do
they
it.
know that
I'm
they
glad they
have
do.
guys who can go out and give you 8-9 innings a time, you know, then okay, yeah. But they don't have that. And
Yeah, and that's the weird thing about baseball now. It's easier to kind of plan around consistency from your bullpen than it is planning around, you know, someone giving you, even if you have, you know, say, you know, David Price, even if he has, you know, goes out and he's lights out and he strikes out 12 batters or whatever, you know, if for whatever reason his pitch count is driven up and he's out in the sixth inning, you know, and your offense hasn't produced, maybe you're only out, maybe he leaves and you're only up 1-0 in the sixth inning, even though he's been lights out, and then you're bringing in a bullpen for 3 innings, they're going to tag you. And that's what happened too many times. So,
yeah, not too worried about the Tigers.
no, that's the long and the short of what we just went over was not too worried about the
I
Tigers.
mean, that may change by June, but
Yeah, once we start.
I'll put it on the record. It's like, you know, the Royals held up with them 2 years ago. They overtook them last year. It's fine. Yeah.
Cabrera's a year older, Martinez a year older, Verlander's a year older. I mean,
Yeah.
and those are all guys that are on the backslide of their prime. You know, like Moose and Hauser are a year older, but they're right in the middle of their prime right now. So that's
Yeah.
actually a good thing, you know. So I don't know. But back to the point at hand.
Right. Right. They
I
have
mean, if,
opportunity with their rotation and basically the same team that played last year.
yeah, I mean, this now that they've signed Kennedy, this team, 2016 opening day, is better than 2015 opening day. The team that started 7-0, 15-7, that was, you know, basically wire to wire, you know, and from start of the season to the trade deadline, without Zobrist and Cueto, we're still the best team in the American League for that
Oh.
entire stretch. So being better than that on paper is going to say something, you know. So that's, I mean, obviously they have to put it together.
Yeah, they have to still hit and they have to, you know, do it all, and they're more expensive, but that's fine.
Yeah,
These are the years
that
that they
has
should
no
be
effect
paying for him,
on
so
the, yeah.
that makes sense. That's what it should be. So, yeah. I think it's going to be fine. And they're pretty much done with what they're going to do. They've got everybody signed via arbitration, at least except Moustakas, which they're not that far apart. I think they're like 2 million apart. They'll probably meet in the middle, maybe a little above the midpoint. They got a 2-year deal with Lorenzo Cain to just get some certainty for what he's going to get paid next year, his final year of arbitration. So, you know, that's pretty much all they've been doing, and that's about all they really need to do. I mean, there's probably going to be a few depth things. They might find an outfielder just in case they decide they aren't comfortable with Jerod Dyson as the opening day, you know, number nine hitter and playing right field or center. But yeah, I don't think they're going to do much more. And you know, that's kind of weird. It's like they've still got their weaknesses. Infante, you don't know what's going to happen there, but you know, I don't think they're not going to go out and get another second baseman, so they're not going to do that. Their bullpen's pretty much set. Their rotation and depth is pretty much set. So they're probably not going to do anything unless it happens to be that they trade for an outfielder or sign somebody or maybe get some minor league signings and see what pans out from them, and that's it. We're just going to wait till spring training. That's
Yeah.
it. That's where we're at.
Yeah. And, you know, here's hoping that Christian Colon has a sort of David Freeze like seize the moment, bring that into the next season. Because yeah, David Freeze said that, you know, the big playoffs in the 2011 when they won the World Series. And then the next year, he came out and did really well, made the All-Star game and all that kind of stuff. And then he kind of came back to earth a little bit. But, you know, maybe Christian Colon kind of bottles up a little bit of that confidence from making such a huge hit in the World Series, that what ended up being the winning run in the World Series, knocking that in, and then can kind of parlay that into being the player that we thought he was going to be, which is, you know, some people would say a poor man's Placido Polanco was his, I believe, the
right
the comparison so often. So I would, if you said that's the best I could get out of Christian Colon, I would sign up for that today, and I'd throw him in at second base opening day, and then you'd be like, man, this is really, you know, that's. And then even if Jerrod Dyson, like you said, is your nine guy, I mean, he still provides a lot of value.
He does.
Very good defense, very good base running, a lot of stolen bases. You know, it's just a matter of him getting on base to take care to take advantage of that. But, you know, all those ancillary things, he provides a ton of value in those areas, even if he doesn't have a ton of offensive prowess. So, I mean, no team is perfect, and we've seen it. In the last few years, there's no team like, you know, some of those Yankee teams in the late 90s, or you were just like 1 through 9. It was just like everyone.
Right. And everybody in the bullpen was good.
Was, yeah. Oh, my God. And that team was so good. But those teams don't exist anymore because of the nature of free agency and the huge contracts. They just, you just can't afford to fill all your holes. So that's what she said. I almost caught myself right when I said it, and I was like, I just got
it. I might as well let it go.
But you can't. I mean, you know, you've got the Red Sox paying David Price $30 million, and they, you know, the Red Sox are going to have to sacrifice some things as part of that. So
yeah, that's money you can't use on some other area of need. And even if you do, you know, go ahead and sign whatever and everybody you want, there's going to be a luxury tax on it. So, you know, you're still going to, you're going to be out somewhere. So it's, there's no way to make that perfect team. And even if you do, you sign guy, you know, Shane Victorino looked like a really big signing a few years ago, and he didn't really do anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, other guys have done that. Pablo Sandoval was one of the bigger guys last winter and didn't really do much. And Hanley Ramirez didn't do much. And just like, you know, you can kind of see some guys this year who might work out that way. So it's, you never know. Even if people are getting, you know, when you're spending money on guys, when you're signing them to contracts, you're paying for what they've done and not what they're going to do, because you don't know what they're going to do. You're assuming and you're guessing that, you know, hey, this guy can continue to do this, which in most cases is probably reasonable. And in some cases, maybe it's not. So, you know, that's when it comes in. When it's Pablo Sandoval, well, no, he didn't continue to do everything he did as a Giant. And, you know, I think he came up in some trade rumors here and there. So it's, you still got to adjust, and you still have to be able to have the depth so that if somebody isn't that good, you know, if Omar Infante is not good, no matter what his contract is, maybe Christian Colon does have an opportunity there, or you know, maybe Paolo Orlando has an opportunity, or whoever. So you just got to have those guys there and see if they can fill in the hole well enough to make it work. And, you know, last year the Royals, for pretty much half the season, they had Dyson and Orlando out there, and then Rios came back, and then Gordon got hurt. And so it was basically those guys carried it at some point for the whole year almost. So they'll probably end up being all right.
Yeah, and, you know, not exactly the same scenario, but last year two years ago when Eric Hosmer got hurt, you know, Billy Butler stepped in, and obviously he was already in the lineup every day as a DH, but he stepped in defensively and was able to make it work and stepped up his game offensively to kind of help fill the void. So, you know, that's kind of what I've liked about the Royals and the direction they're going. We've brought the comparisons to the Cardinals, where the Cardinals just seem to pull these guys out of nowhere, and you're just like, who the hell is this guy, and why is he all of a sudden the MVP of the World Series, you know?
Right.
And that's just what they do. They you know, all their fans, they call it the Cardinal way and whatever, and, you know, and I'd mock it more if there wasn't the results to back it up, which there definitely is. So, I mean, they won 100 games last year, even though they didn't win in the playoffs, and they went to the World Series 3 years ago, or I guess 3 years ago now, yeah, but two seasons ago, but and the you know, I mean, they, that's kind of one of the big things that's made them successful. So now that the Royals are kind of hopefully in that same category where, you know, you throw Christian Colon in the 12th inning in game 5 of the World Series with a chance to knock in the winning run, and he makes it happen. And you've got, you know, obviously Raul Mondesi didn't quite fare as well in his one at bat in the World Series. But, you know, that if you can kind of, I mean, that was kind of the philosophy, though, that was able to get him up there to hit, because you were just like, hey, you know, hey, you're the guy. Let's get up there and do it, make it happen. And, you know, for as much as you want to try and talk about, you know, how much those kind of things actually affect the game or a skill level or something, you know, I do think there's something to that kind of culture of, you know, we're not going to say, oh crap, you know, so-and-so's hurt and now we've got this person, so now we have to change our lineup, we have to change this, we have to change that, we have to do this way because we have to account for this loss. You know, now it's just like, no, you're the next guy up, you're here for a reason, you have to step up, you have to do exactly what this guy did, and we have faith that you can. And I mean, I do believe there's some power in that, you know, hopefully the Royals are now at that point where, you know, once these players start to leave, or if there's any injuries or whatever, they can bring somebody up and won't miss a beat.
I hope that's how it goes. I mean, the best thing is that any of those guys, Mondesi or Chesler Cuthbert, or if it turns out to be like, you know, Brett Eibner, if he gets a shot or whatever, then any of those guys, they don't have to jump in and be the man. I mean, you've got Hosmer to be the man. You've got Alex Gordon to be the man. You've got Sal Perez to be the man. You got Lorenzo Cain to be the man. They don't have to carry it. They just have to come in and do their job and just, you know, believe that the organization has confidence in them to do it. And then, you know, good things can happen. You know, somebody like Colon, who prepared, you know, was with the team through the whole postseason, that was the only game he got into. And he ends up getting a hit in, you know, one of the biggest moments of his career, and he was ready to do it. You know, they just had him there. They had him ready. They knew he could do it, and he did it. So if somebody does get hurt, you feel like Chesler Cuthbert could probably, you know, hold the fort down at third base or first base if he needed to. And if they felt ready to bring up Mondesi for some reason, you could, you know, maybe he wouldn't hit that well, but he'd probably be major league ready on defense. Christian Colon could be a second baseman every day. You know, probably not a great one relative to the league, but good enough for this team, good enough to hit ninth and, you know, be average defensively. So any of those guys can jump in if they need to fill in, and the Royals should feel pretty comfortable about it. The problem would only be if they needed like 3 or 4 of those guys at once. Yeah. Then, but that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, that's not much, I mean, else. Nobody. Can do. Yeah, there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, you brought up a really good point there, where whoever that next man up ends up being at some point this season, if there's a scenario like that, they don't have to be the guy. And, you know, when you look at, you know, we talked a lot about the journey of Alex Gordon when after the Royals signed him to his contract. And, you know, when you looked at his career, some of his early struggles, I think, might have been kind of part of the issue of, you know, that you're the savior. I mean, he gets a standing ovation on opening day. And, you know, same thing happened with Eric Hosmer when he came up. And so I think there was some of that pressure on them because, and those times, you know, the Royals, they didn't have a star. So not only did the fans want someone to kind of resurrect the franchise, but they also wanted a star, you know, a nationally recognized, nationally known player. And now they have those guys. You know, Gordon's a star, Hosmer's a star, Moose's a star, Sal's a star. I mean, these guys are on Late Night with Jimmy Kimmel. They're on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. I mean, the whole deal. So now there's somebody comes up. They don't have to be the guy that saves the franchise, like you said. They don't have to be that star that we want here in Kansas City. They can just go play. And that's probably part of it, part of that kind of next man up ideal there is that it's, you know, they don't have that pressure of having to be that guy, because, you know, there's a reason a lot of times a lot of those guys fail. And then, you know, if it's something that kind of continues to perpetuate itself over a few seasons, and then they end up getting a trade, and then all of a sudden they kind of blow up in another location, and it's like, well, because they don't have the same pressure on them as they did originally. So, you know, I think that was a very good point, and something that is definitely going to play into any success that someone may have in those situations.
Yep. And, you know, if they get a little bit of playing time this year and next year, then when it's time for them to actually take over, it's not going to be as big of a shock. It's not going to be, you know, I mean, a guy like Eric Hosmer played, what, you know, a month in AAA and yep. was called up. And he had it, you know, his rookie year was really, really good. But 2012 was, you know, it was a big deal. It was an expectation that he was going to hit 325 homers, and he didn't do that. And, you know, it's one of those things where you get reminded that these guys are people trying to do a job, and it's not always as easy as it can look. And, you know, hopefully that kind of, you know, acclimation period is something that will help. You know, the Royals can be successful, but also find a way to bring up some of these guys who are going to take over when this guy and that guy leave. And, you know, so that they already have, you know, the opportunity to find those replacements without having to go on the free agent market and spend more money for mostly unknown guys. And then it's also, you know, money that you can't use to supplement in other spots. So, you know, it's just like the Tigers. They have all this money tied up, you know, because they don't have a bunch of prospects coming up that are, you know, necessarily ready to do anything else. They've got to extend all their guys, and you know, you'll probably see, I don't know, one or two more years where they're really trying, and then at a certain point they're going to have to blow it up just because you can't sustain it. And the Royals seem to have at least the hint of a sustainable model. We'll see if the talent level is necessarily there for some of these guys. You know, I think Cuthbert looks like he belongs. The reports on Mondesi are that he should be fine. But we'll see. I mean, it's definitely a far cry from the best farm system in the history of ever.
Right.
But they've still got guys. They've still got guys who could step in, and if you needed them to cover half a season, you'd feel decently comfortable about. And that's a far cry from a couple years ago, where there was nothing close to that.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. And it's, you know, they're, like you said, the talent, there's a little bit of a concern to try and fill in that window because the talent level's not there. From a depth standpoint, from a farm system depth standpoint, the talent isn't there like it was.
Yeah. If Cuthbert goes down too, then who knows?
And you brought that up, and it kind of just made me remember. I remember thinking this season there was, you know, Cuthbert had very limited playing time that he got, but he got some. And I remember thinking how much I was struck by how much I felt like just watching him play, he looked like he belonged, just like you said. And it was just kind of surprising because, you know, when Cuthbert – I was actually writing for you at Kings of Kaufman when Cuthbert kind of burst onto the scene, and he had a really good start to his minor league career when he was 18 or 19 years old. And then he just kind of plateaued for a while, and nobody really knew what was going on. And, you know, it just kind of, and I think I've said this before about him, but he feels kind of like that plays to the level of his competition type guy. So, you know, maybe he wasn't blowing people away at AAA or AA necessarily, but was, you know, proved he belonged, and then finally got the opportunity here in the big leagues. And hey, what do you know? Again, he looks like he belongs. So, you know, that could be something that, you know, he's kind of more with that.
It's like his numbers didn't look great last year, but he never looked spooked.
No, yeah, exactly.
Like he looked like, all right, I'm okay. And he also
he didn't look overmatched.
Yeah, and compared to like what the scouting reports were, they were always like, well, he's real thick in the trunk and yada yada. He doesn't have a lot of athleticism. He looked fine to me. You know, he looked like
I was expecting like a moose type of player, like, yeah, like from a body standpoint.
Like a kind of wide dude, and he really, you know, he's a lot smaller than I really thought he could see.
A lot more svelte than I had imagined based on all the reports. So and maybe that's why he was able to get bumped to the majors last year. Maybe he worked on that and I just, you know, didn't see enough footage or pictures or whatever previously. But
yeah.
I would agree with your statement there on him. But so I think we'll with that, we'll kind of wrap it up. We believe it or not, Mike, we rambled a little bit.
Go figure.
Go figure. Right. But I mean, there's not a ton to talk about. We hit the Ian Kennedy signing, and which still isn't even official yet. So, you know, hopefully that'll happen.
But I don't think it's going to be falling through or anything. So I think.
No, it's definitely not going to fall through.
But, yeah. We'll be fine.
Yeah, but there's there's been that, and pretty much I guess the only other thing is the there's been kind of talk now last day or so of Salvador Perez signing his getting some sort of a rework on his contract, and I don't think there's a lot there. I mean, we've kind of hit the point a little bit on the show before. Just, you know, Salvador Perez has precisely zero leverage in this situation. I think the Royals are trying to throw him a bone because they know they got a deal. I'm sure they'll get something worked out. If they don't, he's probably going to play anyway. So,
right.
Not a ton to talk about.
The options are Sal Perez, who plays 150 games anyway, and then goes and plays in Venezuelan winter leagues and barnstorming tours all off season, is going to choose to not play. I don't think so.
Yeah. And I don't think, again, I've never seen a baseball player hold out. Like, I see it happen all the time in football. But I think part of that is the MLB player union is so much stronger than the NFL players union. And I think part of that is I don't think the Major League Baseball players union would allow someone like a Salvador Perez to sit out.
They've already got guaranteed money. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough to really to push it. And you're already guaranteed whatever is set up, you're getting it paid.
Yeah.
It's not like you can get cut and you're just a cap hit.
Right. And if anything, the only time the players union should have stepped in is they should have stepped in and said, don't sign this contract. So,
yeah. But even at the time, it was, you know, he had a month and a half or so of big league experience.
40 games, I think.
Something like that. And, you know, well regarded, but he was also a guy who signed for like $25,000, you know, as a 16-year-old. So this is an opportunity for him to jump up and guarantee more than just the league minimum and get it right then and, you know, push it along. And you know, it works out now where he's a multiple-time All-Star and has had all these moments in the postseason that, yeah, it looks awful as a contract. It is the most team-friendly contract you could probably imagine that's not just like, oh, Bryce Harper a few years ago when he was, you know, before arbitration. Just he's happened to making the league. No, this is like a contract that he agreed to that pays him just a few million when he's approaching his peak years at a key position where he's the standard. It's just like it is a bad contract, but the Royals don't have to do anything about it. It's a contract. He agreed to sign it. There it is. But I mean, I can see it. I can see that they might. A lot of those years are option years, and people online have suggested, hey, just guarantee all but one of those or something, and then, you know, it's a lot better. Maybe add some money to it, maybe add another option or year or two to kind of sweeten it up a bit. Then I kind of get it, but there's no reason that the Royals would go out and say, hey, we're going to restructure this so you're going to get 5 years and $100 million instead of 5 years and $12 million or whatever he's got over the next stretch.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to be.
It's not going to be
anything like.
It's not going to be McCann or Mauer or anything like that, because they don't have to do it. They've got him. They've got him until 2019 if they want to, and I think he makes like $7 million that last year.
God,
just silly. $7 million. Jeremy Guthrie made $9 million last year.
Even if Perez just does what he did last year, but does it for the next 5 years, like, could you imagine? I mean, with the way salaries are increasing in baseball, how much of a deal that would be for $7.5 million in 2019 or whatever? I mean, good Lord. Like, I mean, how much does Buster Posey make? You know, I mean, he's not as good as Posey offensively, but I mean, damn, like he's on that level.
The money would not even be close.
No. So
not even approaching close.
Yeah, so hopefully they get something worked out just so that he can be happy. And I think too, what the Royals might be doing with this is and we'll kind of wrap this up, like I said, but they might want to restructure a little bit, just because not only will it help make Sal Perez happy, but then makes the rest of the players look in the clubhouse and players outside baseball say, hey, you know, the Royals didn't have to do anything, but they like their player. They took care of their player. So if I come to Kansas City, they're going to take care of me, yep. You know? So that's kind of an added benefit.
Yeah. I mean, it can't hurt if that's the deciding factor in some cases for someone to sign an extension or sign there on a free agent deal, then, you know, that's a benefit.
Yep. So, all right. Well, with that, I think we'll wrap up this evening and then come back next week. Hopefully we'll have a little bit more to talk about. I don't think that we probably will, unfortunately. I guess we'll be 1 week closer to pitchers and catchers reporting.
Yep.
But
at some point we need to actually sit down and try to like remember how to like read about prospects.
Yeah,
because that's what you said. The last few years, the Royals have won, and it just really hasn't been this eye to the future. And you know,
the question we always had of do other teams that win pay as much attention as Royals fans did back in 2010, 2011 to the farm system? Now we know the answer.
Yeah, I didn't know. Like, I know the main guys, and that's about it.
Yeah, the other reason really we know them is because they're kind of spillover. They were the really young, low A. rookie ball guys,
right?
Still, they signed Mondesi, and was it 2012 they signed him?
Yep.
So, I mean, he was still kind of in that looking at the farm system period. So, I mean, that's a lot of those, like the new guys, I hardly know any of their new draft crop. I know they signed the Ash Russell, but that's, you know, yeah, we'll definitely have to do some, maybe that'll be our thing. We'll do some research and we'll talk prospects next week. We'll have kind of a throwback show. How does that sound?
We'll give it a shot.
No guarantees. But
I don't remember how to look at that stuff, though.
I know. Where do I go? What do I do with my hands? I don't know.
World Series problems.
Yeah, World Series World Series champion problems. I'll take it every day.
Right, absolutely.
So, all right. Well, with that, we'll leave you, and hopefully we'll come back. So thanks for stopping in and listening. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. For Michael Engel and myself, Jeff Herr, thank you so much for listening. And as always, go Royals.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can find us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Kansas City Baseball Vault. If you want to email your thoughts or comments, send those to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also sign up and subscribe through iTunes, through Stitcher, or you can just go to RoyalsPodcast.com or KansasCityBaseballVault.com for any updates.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Limagitosis. Yep.
All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl games. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. make it your place to go any time of the week.